Hi everyone, we have a special announcement before we begin this week's episode. Have you ever wished that you could walk around a city and be given a private, intimate tour whispered into your ears in a sultry tone by a celebrity expert guide?
All the time. Yeah.
Well, that dream is now a reality if you're visiting London. Ooh. Because QI has teamed up with VoiceMap, a brilliant self-guided tour app to bring you the first quite interesting tours, packed full of our trademark unusual facts.
And narrated by none other than Mr. QI himself, Sir Stephen Fry.
Whoa. Yeah. You simply download the app from the Apple Store or Google Play, select your tour, stick your headphones in, and get walking.
It's really easy to use. You can put your phone away because VoiceMap monitors your location as you're on the move, and it plays audio to you automatically as you arrive at each location. So it's great. You don't need to check your phone the whole time.
You can do it whenever you like, and like start whenever, stop, have a drink, halfway through.
Do it at 3 a.m. if you're interested.
Creepy.
We've got good street lights here in London, so you know, you'll be able to see everything. We've put two London tours together so far, one of Westminster and one of the City and Bankside.
That's right. So whether you're a first-time visitor to London or a lifetime local, you can take directions from Stephen and see the city from a whole new perspective. For example, did you know that
London is home to over 8.4 million trees, covering 21% of the city? This means that by the UN's standards, it can officially be classified as a forest.
That's so cool. I didn't know that.
I feel so healthy now.
Yeah. Or did you know that our most famous landmark, Big Ben,
keeps accurate time with the help of a handful of pre-decimal coins? A single penny balanced on the pendulum can speed the clock up by 2/5 of a second.
Who uses cash these days?
Yeah, only our clocks.
Well, yeah, only our clocks. That's where it all is.
You might discover how
London's classic red phone boxes were actually based on a tomb.
Oh, they do look quite like a tomb, actually.
So, what's not to love? To get started, just visit qi.com/voicemap.
If you're not going to be in London anytime soon, you can still get involved. You can listen to the tours virtually, just like a podcast or audiobook.
But before you crack into that, make sure you enjoy this week's episode of Lunchbox Envy.
Hey.
This week on Lunchbox Envy, boil them, mash them,
stick them in a stew.
It's potatoes! Woo! Hello, and welcome to Lunchbox Envy. I'm Manu, and I'm here with my fellow QI elf, Jack. Hello, Jack. How are you doing?
Hello, Manu. I'm fantastic. We're also joined by food writer and chef Rosie McKean.
Hello. Hi. I'm very excited to talk about potatoes today. Probably worth figuring out the scope of what we're going to discuss, because this is the UK and potatoes is a broad as hell topic.
Oh, yeah.
Today, we are going to talk about just potatoes and not their crispy, crunchy fried cousins, chips, fries, or crisps. But anything else is fair game. It's like boiled, mashed,
stewed. We can't not do an episode just on chips. And similarly, we can't not do an episode just on crisps. They are the two main food groups that I eat.
So what is a potato?
What is a
potato? For all the golems out there who've never heard of them.
Potatoes are a starchy, bulbous tuber. So that's the kind of plant they are. So they're actually modified stems that some plants use to store energy, so extra starches and sugars. Okay. Because they go underground, it means they can like spread and proliferate without damaging the plant.
Yes. Did you read about wheat? If wheat grows too big, it'll fall over and die. But potatoes can just grow and grow and grow as long as they've got the resources.
Which is why they're such a useful crop, because you can grow a silly amount of them and they're not going to hurt themselves.
As one Lebanese farmer found out when he dug his out and it was 12 kilos.
Whoa.
It's as big as his head.
What, one single potato?
One single potato, yeah.
12 kilos?
Yeah.
That is big.
Is that your dream, Rosie?
Well, I do like potatoes. I'm Celtic, Irish, Scots descent. So potatoes is a really important part of my diet. I love them.
But Interestingly, they're not native to the countries they're associated with.
Not
at all.
No. Yeah. Can I guess where they're from?
Please do.
Are they from South America?
Correct.
Ding, ding.
You win a potato.
Please.
They're native to the Peruvian, Bolivian Andes, and then Spanish colonists brought them back to Europe in about the 1570s. So it's actually 10 years before the story of Francis Drake coming to Queen Elizabeth with the potato and tobacco. Yes. So they'd already arrived in Europe by that
time. I read about this. There was a statue in Offenburg, Germany, that was put there in 1853, and it's of Francis Drake.
Oh.
And he's holding a potato plant, and the inscription says, "Disseminator of the potato in Europe in the year of our Lord, 1586. Millions of people who cultivate the earth bless his immortal memory."
Whoa.
But then those xenophobes, the Nazis, took it down in 1939, so it's not there anymore.
Well,
but,
I mean, to be fair, it does sound like Francis Drake was an absolute charlatan.
Well, it wasn't thanks to him, was it?
Well, no, it was the Spaniards. But also, one thing that the Smithsonian points out in their article about the history of potatoes, excellent read, is they're like, if anyone deserves credit for the potato, surely it should go to the Andean people that domesticated it.
For sure.
So one of the really cool things about potatoes is that there are so many varieties. The International Potato Center in Peru has preserved about 5,000 of them. And the way that people learned how to eat them, does anyone know the story?
No.
Oh, it's so cool. This is about how people figured out how to eat them without dying. Potatoes are a part of the nightshade family, like tomatoes and aubergines. As we know with a tomato, they contain solanine, which is poisonous.
Yes.
So the Andeans learned how to eat potatoes by watching guanacos and vicuñas, which are kind of like a cousin of the llama. So they're indigenous to the Andean mountains. And what they did was they licked clay before eating the potato. And it turns out that clay adsorbs the clay. So that's adsorb with A-D-S, not A-B-S, absorb.
What's the difference?
So adsorption is when something clings to the molecules and it's like kind of sticky.
Okay.
So it kind of sticks to all of the solanine molecules so that the poison passes straight through their digestive system. So they poop out the poison, but they keep the potato-y goodness.
So why don't we need to do that now? Because they've bred out the solanine?
Yeah, they've bred more human-friendly varieties. But the Andean people saw this, and what they used to do is make like a clay gravy to go with potatoes.
Mm.
So like
clay
a similar
gravy.
Thing.
Clay. Gravy.
And you can still, they still sell little bags of clay with your potatoes.
Do
they? In Bolivia, yeah.
Whoa, wow. That's so cool.
There are still solanine poisonings around the world. I mean, they're quite infrequent, and you usually have to have quite old potatoes that have been stored badly. But if they're green, then there's more solanine.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I also read about this International Potato Center.
Yes.
I think it's fascinating because it's the largest collection of living genetic plant samples. And down the road, there's a potato park. So down the road in Cuzco, in Peru, which is basically a number of acres of farmland that is dedicated to growing potatoes. And it's all between 3,400 and 4,900 meters altitude. And for context, Ben Nevis is 1,400 meters. So it's like already twice as tall as anywhere in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the natural environment of the potato. And they're all cultivated by indigenous families. I think there's five families who run the place. And they're keeping incredible genetic diversity going with traditional techniques. And it's a bit of a tourist attraction. You can go. I'd love to do it one day.
So you say this is in Cusco, right? So that's pretty close to Machu Picchu. So it's kind of perfect, really, because you could carb load at the potato place. Go on your Machu Picchu trek a couple of days. Come back. Reload. Feel much better. Absolutely
and then
perfect.
Go back up Machu Picchu.
Maybe that's how they did it. Was it the Incas who built Machu Picchu? That's how they built it. Machu Picchu is sponsored by potatoes.
Another thing that I realized I could not answer this question. The difference between sweet potato yams and the potato. So they're all tubers, but they're all very different plants. So sweet potato is a vine that is sometimes called a yam by the Americans. It is not a yam. like potatoes from the Andes, but they are not potatoes. Yams are a vine that are related to grasses and lilies that are predominantly grown in West Africa.
Yeah.
It's very confusing.
But sweet potatoes are not quite the same thing as potatoes.
No.
Because they're hella sweet.
They are very sweet.
But the etymology actually is what links these two. Uh-huh. So batata was the original Taino word. The Taino people were native to Cuba and a few other islands of the Caribbean. That was their word for sweet potato. So mm-hmm. it gets more and more confusing. And then papa was the Quechua, the Incan word mm-hmm. for the true potato, mm-hmm. Native to the Andes, which is why in Spanish the word for potato is papa. And in English, it's potato.
Yeah, but I would say it differs on the Spanish because
really?
European Spanish, you would also hear patatas.
Mm. Oh, of course.
Like patatas bravas.
Yeah. I never questioned that.
Whereas in South American Spanish and Central American Spanish, definitely papas is way more common. Did you know that patata is slang for vagina?
Oh, damn.
Ding, ding, ding,
it always us. Is.
All right, our first lunchbox is yours, Jack.
Woohoo!
Well, I have brought raw potatoes.
Hey.
But I've brought an incredible variety. So,
oh, God.
Oh, look at that. That's a heritage bunch, that. One of them looks like a giant finger.
That is the giant finger variety. And they're all quite varied. That one's incredibly dark.
Yeah.
I think we should cut that one in half later. That one... It looks like, I mean, it's a normal potato shape, but it's sort of stripy with like pink blotches.
You know when someone's brought their rock collection to school. Yeah.
But this is basically to highlight the historical importance of genetic variety and just the incredible wonder crop that is the potato. As we mentioned in the first section, there is an international potato center where they grow lots of varieties. Mm-hmm. And NASA have been in touch and they're trying to work out
NASA have been in touch with you.
No, not with me. I wish. NASA have been in touch with the International Potato Center in order to find, now I don't know if any of you have seen The Martian, a variety that can grow on Mars.
Ooh.
I actually haven't seen The Martian, but it's the movie with Matt Damon, right?
Yeah, and one of the things he does in order to survive is because he's a botanist, is to grow potatoes in his own poo.
Nice.
But it keeps them going because the potato is a wondrous crop. It doesn't need pollination. You chop off a bit of a tuber, plant it, and it will grow.
Mm-hmm.
The potatoes can also grow indefinitely. And basically, NASA will want to find the perfect variety of potato because the International Potato Center covers many different heights and varieties and cultivation methods. That if you can find one that grows in Mars... You're also future-proofing the planet because anything that can grow on Mars can grow in the harshest climates on Earth.
Right. So, sorry, for them to test this, are they mimicking Mars conditions on Earth or are they...
In laboratories,
I was going to say it's a bit expensive to fly it all out just for a quick check.
Well, in 1995, NASA did manage to germinate potatoes. So they're the first plants that have been... essentially grown in space.
Yeah. Wow. That's so cool.
As I mentioned, that was so important to the Incas and they had a very specific method of freeze drying them so that they would last the winter because you can't grow them when the soil is frozen.
Yeah.
As often happens when you're 4,000 meters up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
So what they would do is they would leave them on their roofs to freeze overnight and then they dry in the hot sun and then they'd squash them all down. And so they were more exposed to the air and they basically dried and they froze and then they thawed and they froze and they thawed and it got rid of all the moisture, which meant they could last many months in sort of sealed huts. They would keep piles of these and they're known as chuños. And I think they still do it.
That is so clever.
Yeah, really clever.
So cool.
It's like potato jerky.
It's exactly potato jerky. I heard they sometimes squish them with their feet as well, kind of like when you're pressing grapes. So they're like have a good stomp on them. And yeah, I tried to find some as well. You? Because they look actually quite tasty, but they are so expensive.
Really?
Yeah. Like,
can you make your own?
How thin are we talking? Like wafer thin?
No, they're not thin. They're kind of like still bulbous. They just look spongy.
They're so integral to the Incans' diet. They literally told time using their potatoes.
What?
So they had a unit of time. And it was the length of time that it took to boil a potato.
Oh, I love that.
So they'd be like, I'll see you in 3 boils time.
Cool.
Down the pub.
That is so clever.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of variety in the potato plant and the Incas, there's one variety called the Pusi Quachun Wahachi, whose name literally means make your daughter-in-law cry.
Oh, God.
Because there was a ritual where you had to try and peel this incredibly knobbly potato.
Mm.
And if you could do it, then you'd impress your potential mother-in-law. She'd allow the marriage.
Mm.
What happened if you didn't?
You had to find something else.
Oh, God.
Potatoes, they have three times as many calories per square meter as wheat, oats, or barley. So if you dedicate a field to growing potatoes, you'll get three times the calories. And I think part of the fact that it's so versatile, so varied, and so calorie dense and nutrient dense meant that by the time the Europeans took them back, they gained such an advantage over, because the famines were commonplace. Mm-hmm. And suddenly they were able to be famine proof, all these countries. Mm-hmm. One historian, he's William McNeill, has argued that the potato led to empire. Basically, by feeding rapidly growing populations, it meant that a handful of European nations could basically dominate most of the world between 1750 and 1950, which is a really interesting concept. I love these ideas that one tiny little sliding doors change made an enormous impact later on, centuries later. But what's also interesting about that is he says that 1750, even though the Europeans discovered potatoes in the early 1500s, it took a long time for them to get accepted. Mm. And part of that is because of straight out racism. I think they were worried that these are food for savages. But also they knew that they were part of the deadly nightshade family. Mm-hmm. And therefore they avoided them at all costs.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, Jack, this is one of my favorite stories.
So there was a pharmacist called Augustin Parmentier. And he was living in the 1700s. And he was captured by the Prussians during the Seven Years' War, which was 1756 to 1763. And he was captured five times by the Prussians. Each time he was captured, the Prussians gave him potatoes. And this was partly because the Prussian king at the time was an early adopter. And he realized the nutritional benefits and the fact that he didn't starve and he didn't get unhealthy. And so he tried to promote potatoes when he got back to France. Again, five times. I don't know why he kept getting captured and released. But he had interesting different ways to promote them. So one of the ways he did it was he invited the king, King Louis XVI, and Marie Antoinette, and he showed them around the gardens at Versailles where he was growing potatoes, and he gave them each a potato flower. And Louis XVI put it in his buttonhole, and Marie Antoinette put the flowers in her hair, and then they were seen by all the crowds in Versailles and Paris and the like. And that was one way to do it. But the other way, which I think is what Manny's alluding to, is that he used a bit of reverse psychology. So he created a potato patch, and then he put armed guards around, and they were guarding the potato patch 24/7 in order to convince the local peasants that there was something worth stealing. So the guards were kind of instructed to sort of let the occasional thief get through. And the peasants would steal the potato plants and the tubers underneath and be like, oh, this must be valuable and delicious. That it then encouraged the spread of potatoes. They would sort of, on a black market, start spreading them and sharing them. And it was a way to sort of increase the value of potatoes through scarcity.
Mm. Yeah, it's a clever marketing tactic used even now. And it's interesting that his name was... What did you say? Is Augustin Parmentier?
Parmentier.
Because Parmentier is basically a catch-all phrase in French cookery for potato, like mashed potato dishes. So
but just the shift that he encouraged was mad. Because before he went on this campaign, like, growing potatoes was illegal in France. Like, between 1748 and 72, people couldn't grow them because the French believed that they caused leprosy. Yeah. And he was buried in a plot ringed by potato plants in the end.
Kind of morbid, though. Like, makes me think of The Last of Us vibes, like scary zombie potatoes.
Let's move on to our second lunchbox, and that is you today, Rosie. What have you bought for us?
Yay! Woo. Oh, I'm so excited because I bought something that's really, like, personal for me. I have brought with me potato farls, also called potato bread, also known as, in Scotland, tatty scones, or also in Ireland, fadge.
Oh, no. No, no, no. Sorry.
It's a very simple flatbread that you make with mashed potato. And I grew up eating these with Marmite and butter for breakfast. I haven't got any Marmite, sorry, but we've got butter. Made these yesterday. I recommend using a fork because they're not like the kind of bread that is crispy enough that you sort of shovel it into your mouth with your hands. So let's try it first because, you know, I'm hungry now. It's a different kind of bread to what you would normally use the word bread for, right? Basically, potato bread is made with leftover mashed potato or freshly mashed potato, butter, baking powder or bicarbonate of soda,
mm-hmm.
and flour. Potato is actually great in bread. You might have eaten potato sourdough before. Well, yeah. You might have had potato rolls at like burger restaurants and stuff. It basically, potato keeps things soft and moist. Mm. So when you use it in a like traditional bread dough, that's its function. But these aren't a traditional bread dough. And the reason for this is because when these were being made in Ireland and in Scotland, and many parts of the world, I'm sure, but predominantly the reason why these are so popular in Ireland is because Ireland only can grow soft flours. The thing about a soft flour is that it doesn't work very well with yeast. And when you make a traditional bread dough with soft Irish flour and yeast, it doesn't have enough gluten in it, doesn't work, it isn't good.
Mm.
So they basically didn't make breads with yeast. They used to make potato bread and probably the most other famous Irish bread, which is soda bread.
Soda bread, yeah.
And they would use as their leavener soda, baking powder, bicarbonate soda, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
I never made that link. So it's because they have soft flour.
Mm. It's because historically their own flour just wouldn't work.
Uh-oh.
So this was a much better way of baking bread and making breads. So as we know, Ireland does have a long and complex history with potatoes.
Mm.
Potato bread kind of went out of fashion because of the Irish potato famine in 1845. Which I won't go into massively, but basically was started by a really awful blight on the potato crop, but then made exponentially worse by brutal and completely unempathetic British colonial approaches to the famine. And they basically made it 100 times worse.
Mm-hmm. They were exporting all the potatoes that survived England to feed the English.
That was so devastating, that famine, that 1 million people, probably more than that, died. Mm. So after that, soda bread was way more popular. Mm. But potato bread is still available. You can buy it in supermarkets. And you typically in Ireland, you'd have it with your breakfast, with a fried breakfast, with soups and stews for mopping, like that kind of stuff.
Mm.
It's so good, guys. It's mm-hmm. basically, if you've ever made gnocchi, it's not that far off.
That's mm-hmm. a good point.
It's like if gnocchi and a crepe had a baby.
Oh.
So why are some potatoes better than others at cooking, and certain different types of cooking, like a roasting potato is not the same as a salad potato.
Mm, no, it is not. And don't you forget it. When you go to the supermarket, you might have noticed that there are sort of different terminologies for different potatoes, and they might say they're good for certain things and other things, like chipping, roasting, mashing, frying, baking, salads. I think one of the biggest pitfalls in potato cookery is that people don't know what the types are,
mm-hmm.
what the functions of the types are, mm-hmm. what the differences are. That is because there are two sort of main types. There's waxy mm-hmm. and there's floury. So waxy potatoes contain more sugar than starchy or floury potatoes.
Oh.
They also have a higher moisture content.
Mm.
Therefore, they literally will not get crispy as well as a floury potato will.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Waxy potatoes are harvested earlier.
Okay.
And floury potatoes are harvested later.
Right.
When a waxy potato is harvested before the sugars in the plant convert to starches, resulting in this higher sugar content. They also will, you might have noticed, look more yellow.
Mm.
Good waxy potatoes for use in salads, braises, grilled or steamed. These are sort of potatoes that are most widely available in supermarkets and grocers. I like Anya, Apache, Charlotte, particularly like Charlotte, Jersey Royals, currently in season. Cornish Kings, about to be in season. Good starchy potatoes used in baking, roasting, chips, mashing. Kestrel, King Edward, Maribel, Maris Pipers, Golden Kings. I love a Golden King, me. Rooster, Russet and Vivaldi.
Okay. Vivaldi.
Some all-rounders for you. Desiree.
Ooh.
Elfie. And our good friend, the pink fur.
So in my head, you're flipping between baby names and stripper names, and I can't.
They are quite interesting, the names.
Yeah.
So the big question on mine and many listeners' minds will be, how do you get the ultimate crispy roast potato, fried potato?
Yes, because in this country, a roast potato is religion. So it's important to know where to start. Right. So obviously, first place is pick a good potato. As I've said, you need those floury varieties of potatoes.
Okay.
For me, a Maris Piper is absolutely perfect. King Edward, lovely as well. So let's go through it. Firstly, when you cut potatoes, have you noticed that they'll be like a sort of filmy, white, floury, maybe on your knife or on your board?
Mm-hmm.
So you want to wash that off. It's kind of confusing because you're like, but I'm using a starchy potato, but why am I washing off the starch? It's because that is excess starch, which will actually inhibit the water absorption in the pan.
Okay, yeah.
So you want to wash that off. I advise you to parboil or even fully boil your potatoes because starch gelatinizes when it cooks in water and creates a sticky layer on the outside of your potato. This is the bit that you typically would like to zhuzh up in your colander, right?
When
you,
Yeah.
A good rule of thumb with vegetables is if it grows underground, it needs to start cooking in water from cold because it's going to be way, way, way denser.
Ah.
And to get an even cook, it needs to heat up with the water.
Ah.
Whereas something growing above ground, a human. A human bean. That can go straight into boiling water.
Okay.
Because it's a lot less dense.
Write that down.
The next stage is very important. You must let them dry and steam and actually cool down a bit because that's when that layer starts to dehydrate and the starch recrystallizes.
I see, yeah.
Becoming something that can now, when matched with oil and fat and heat, start to have the all-important Maillard reaction. And crisp. And then give them a nice good coating in oil. And don't be stingy with the oil, guys. Like, it really pisses me off when I see people with like 2 teaspoons of fucking oil. The fat isn't as important as you think.
Okay.
You can use pretty much any fat. It won't really make a huge difference. It's the process and the potatoes that you're buying.
Yeah.
The final part is the roasting. And that should happen at a nice high temperature and ideally for not too long. But I've always found that a roast potato just takes as long as it takes. And so I have a saying in my house, which is that once the potatoes go in the oven, you work for the potatoes. So potatoes don't work for you. So a nice high temperature, 200 is great. And then you're roasting for as long as it takes to get them crispy. And you need to turn them and expose every side of your potato to oil as possible. Because that oily, potato-y, starchy layer on the outside is what needs to cook in the oil.
Sounds like a lot of effort.
Yeah.
It's not, I've got to say, like, for a good roast potato, you should be working. And it will be worth it.
Mm-hmm. Or just make chips.
Whoa.
Banned word. We'll save it for the chips episode.
So, to review, the top tips for roasting potatoes are starchy potato. Peel them, cut them up, put them in cold water, bring them up to the boil, parboil them, drain them, fluff them, let them dry out, into hot oil, into the oven, roast them nice and high, just until they're done.
Amazing.
I'm going to get so much hate from the chef bros on Instagram about this.
Let's move on to our final lunchbox, and that is mine. I had a question when I came into this episode.
Okay.
Which I know we've all been wondering. How do you milk a potato?
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. I found that potato milk is another one of the great milk alternatives that are available on the market. There's a Swedish company called Doug that's been working on potato milk for a while. It's actually available. It was available in London until quite recently. Haven't been able to get my hands on any. Ooh. The recipe was developed by a food scientist called Professor Eva Thornburg. I found one online and I brought it in today.
Oh my God.
Oh,
it looks
like potato milk.
It looks like breast milk.
So
it's very thick.
It's
I've just noticed
thick.
The texture. This isn't what they mean.
I'm hoping that the professional version is more milky than this. So what I did was I boiled the potatoes and then I peeled them because I was too lazy to do it the other way around. So much easier to peel when they're already boiled. Anyway, so I did that. Let them dry, and then I whacked them in a blender with some water. Bush, bush, bush. Really, really smooth. And then I passed that mixture through a cheesecloth. So it comes out of the cheesecloth like insanely gloopy. And then I mix that with some water to make it whatever the consistency this is. And the original recipe said add some sweetener, add some salt. I didn't do that because...
Great, thank you, Manu.
Perfect. You're welcome. But you know what? There's actually so little potato in this.
Mm.
So I started with a good like pot of potato because I assumed that was what you need. You needed to make this much, but you add so much water to get it to this floopy consistency.
Yeah.
So would anyone like to try my potato milk?
Go on then. Bottoms up.
Ooh. It pours.
It does look smooth.
It looks like it's like...
I don't want to say it.
It looks like cum.
It looks so much like cum. This morning... And I made this... So early in the morning as well. My flatmates were like, the fuck are you doing? Okay, bottoms up.
Oh.
It literally just tastes like watery potato. Mm.
Yeah, it tastes like school mash.
It does taste like school mash.
It's just boring. It's like,
it's not even really milky. Like, just texturally not close to milk.
Well, that's the thing. I think in the dog recipe, they add more protein and vitamins and more fat. To give it like a creamier.
I'm glad I tried it though.
Oh, yeah. So it is a more eco-friendly way to consume milky substances. Sorry, that sounds so gross when I say it out loud. Obviously, potatoes are a lot more environmentally friendly than like cow dairy.
Sure.
Another thing I did find, which is actually cool and probably very tasty, scientists in Israel have just found a way to bioengineer potatoes. So they produce casein, which is the milk protein that's used to make cheese.
Wow.
So is the idea that you would make milk and then cheese from these lactating potatoes?
Yeah, kind of. I think you actually kind of make the powdered version and then you use that to produce cheese. I tried to figure out how they were extracting the casein protein from the potatoes and the exact methods they were using to create the cheese. But obviously they haven't advertised that, just like that they can produce this protein.
Mm-hmm.
But it's called Finally Cheese.
Finally, comma, cheese?
They're literally Finally Cheese.
We do have cheese. Do these guys know?
But yeah, so that is a way to literally milk a potato that's probably way more tasty than what I have done.
Milk. Did you ever make a potato clock in primary school?
What is that?
If you haven't heard of a potato clock, we should talk about potato batteries. So a potato battery works when you have two metal nodes, and they have to be different metals. Copper and zinc work quite well. And you connect them with a wire and you stick them into either end of the potato. And then the natural acids and salts inside the potato can create the flow of electrons, which is basically how you make a battery. So yeah, in a power cut, if you just had a potato and two random pieces of copper and zinc connected by a wire, then you could make a torch.
I shall be off to the hardware shop tomorrow for my copper and zinc.
Pick up all your nodes.
They sell that right there.
But what's interesting is if you boil the potato first, it's actually 10 times more effective.
No way. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, yeah.
In my head, it would be the other way around because a boiled potato is so mushy and floury and not very like functional as a thing.
So boiling the potato breaks down the resistant cell structures, and then it does what you were saying. It gelatinizes the starches and then lets them recrystallize and releases more ions into the water, which reduces the resistance. And that's why, you know, the current flows easier.
That's so cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Whilst we're on... survival and potatoes, which I have decided that is what the potato battery is. Have you heard about the all potato diet?
Oh, this sounds dangerous. No, I haven't.
Sounds like my diet.
Yeah. So in 2010, an American man called Chris Voigt, who ate 20 potatoes a day for 2 months, and he did not die.
Oh my God.
In fact, he lost 21 pounds despite consuming his recommended calorie intake. It lowered his cholesterol, his blood sugar, and his mineral levels stayed the same. So his iron, his calcium, all of his protein stats, they were completely fine.
In what form were these potatoes taking?
Oh, so many, Rosie.
Okay, so he did actually like
vary it,
try to sort of get butter and cream in there?
No, I think it was just potato. So no other kind of calorie. calories from potatoes, wow, so all of your vitamins and nutrients from potatoes. I think he fried some, yeah, but he wasn't adding any other kind of...
Yeah, that was my worry, is that he wasn't adding anything, and that's got to be some dry as hell potato products.
I mean, there's so Eater covered the story at the time, and they were absolutely disgusted, which is fair. It's pretty gross. They were going through different occasions at which he'd had to kind of improvise. So one was at a Thai restaurant for his son's 9th birthday, when there were no potatoes on the menu. So instead he ate a massive bag of crisps, which had expired, but that was all they had in the restaurant and he had to eat them anyway. And then another one was his wife made him potato ice cream by putting it in the freezer and then blending it up. And he put some like low calorie chocolate sauce on it, and that was his ice cream.
A bit like your turnip ice cream.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Was a bit.
There's no new ideas, great. Are there?
No.
I'm just imagining the eye rolls of the poor staff at that Thai restaurant when this man comes in and is like, I can only eat pure potato dishes.
What have you got?
That is it for this week's edition of Lunchbox Envy. You can follow our socials for foodie facts and podcast updates. We are on X, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at Lunchbox Envy Pod.
Yes, that's right. And you can also get in touch and send us your facts, recipes, and questions by emailing us, lunchbox@qi.com.
Rosie, do you have any bonus potato recipes in your new book?
Unsurprisingly, there are loads. Got roast potatoes in there, got oven chips, but they're basically just the best chips ever. And probably one of my favorites is Colcannon, which is Irish mashed potatoes with Savoy cabbage, spring onions, and loads and loads of crispy bacon and bacon fat on top. Really good.
Okay, lovely. We'll leave you with these wise words from A.A. Milne, the author of Winnie the Pooh. What I say is that if a fellow really likes potatoes, he must be a pretty decent sort of fellow. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Lunchbox Envy was hosted by Jack Chambers, Rosie McKean, and me, Manu Oreo. It was mixed by Liang Lee and produced by Alex Bell. This has been a quite interesting podcast.